Closing out a very busy week, chatting with you Friday, May 3rd, 2024 on Connecticut Today, where we kicked off the show with Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Civil Engineering Ari Perez on the demolition and planned reconstruction of Norwalk's Fairfield Avenue Bridge after an accident and tanker truck fire on I-95. Norwalk Mayor Harry Rilling also called in to chat about the Thursday morning I-95 accident and fire. And finally, former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso joined us with his weekly update. So within the last hour or so, we have a little more clarity, a little better of a timetable now as to what's going on along the Connecticut Turnpike, Interstate 95 northbound and southbound in Norwalk in the exit 15 area after, of course, what happened early yesterday morning. Some 4,000 gallons out of 8,000 gallons of gas in a tanker ended up burning, shutting down the road and doing irreparable damage to the Fairfield Avenue Bridge. I've got some segments coming up from Governor Ned Lamont, also Norwalk Mayor Harry Rilling. Mayor Rilling will join us live on the program later on to update how his city is handling this traffic and business closures and all that. Joining us right now, though, to start the program today to give us kind of a better aspect of this from a nuts and bolts point of view, what has to happen here, is an expert, Associate Professor of Civil Engineering, Professor Ari Perez from Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Hey, Professor, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So when you saw this, saw the news accounts and the video, Professor, of what happened yesterday, with your background, what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts is, oh my gosh, I am glad that this bridge didn't fall down.
Really?
It is very clear to me that it had a lot of damage to it and that, you know, this fire was pretty rough on it. But when you design a structure in civil engineering, you know, you can't account for it to always stay serviceable no matter what, but you do aim to prevent total collapse, even in very extreme circumstances like this one. And whoever did this bridge, you know, I know this bridge was newer about 10 years ago, but I am sure they are very happy with their bridge's performance.
Okay, so you talk about the performance of a bridge, and thankfully, Professor, as you said, it didn't fall, whether people, either more people below it or people on top of it. So tell my listeners, what would have made this bridge maybe stable or good here? Now, of course, it has to be repaired, as everyone is saying, but to your comments about the successful design of the bridge, what do you think kept it from collapsing?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that we think about when we design a structure like this. We think of the loads that can affect it, right? So that's when you think of like vertical loads, like cars or lateral loads. You also design for some people for things to run into it. And then you think a lot about the materials and the material properties. I don't want to get like too technical here, but one of the things that we do in civil engineering is we try to have structures actually deform and show that deformation before it actually fails so that you can visually inspect them and tell, oh my gosh, something's happening here, let's close this down. As I understand, the beams themselves had plastic deformation. They actually got bent due to the fire and the weight of the bridge after the fire had weakened the beams. And so I think that that means that they were able to not necessarily foresee that this would be these temperatures would be something that the bridge would be exposed to, but to have enough strength in reserve so that if it did happen, the bridge would be not serviceable, but not collapse.
So when steel or certain grades of steel or materials are picked out for structures in particular like this one, Professor Perez, you kind of just answered the question, but go into it a little deeper. So there is a cushion there, right? There is, tolerances, I guess would be the word, that you've got to go above and beyond to try and imagine the worst things that could happen here.
Yeah, and you do that in all kinds of contexts. You know, the easiest one to see is load. And the example that I always tell my students is, I think everybody has had the experience where they get into an elevator, a lift, and, you know, the lift very soon gets filled, and you look at, like, the weight limit, and you're like, gosh, there is more than 600 pounds worth of people here.
I will admit, I've done the math in my head, but go ahead.
for sure. Like, I don't want to say it on air, but I weigh a lot.
Yeah.
And so if I'm in an elevator, I already know that I'm like a good way of the way to the weight limit. And what makes me safe in remembering is that that is the weight limit that it is rated for, but the ultimate strength at the point at which it breaks is actually much higher than that. And if you've gone rock climbing, you know the same thing, that the strength that any line is rated for is different than the strength at which it actually breaks. And when we look at bridge design, that is exactly one of the things we do. So we use a thing sometimes called factor of safety, which tells you how many more times can this structure take the load that is rated, that it's designed for, before it breaks. That can be very little in the case of like helicopters. You actually don't want to make them too safe because that makes them too heavy and expensive to operate, and then you just consume a lot of fuel. So you tack on an extra 20%, right, or something like that. But for me, what I do foundation design. And most foundations out there have a factor of safety of 3, which means that if I am telling people you can load this with 1 ton, it actually can take 3 tons before it breaks. And every structure, you know, depending on what you have, you will adjust these factors of safety and you will work in that way. But yeah, everything that, because safety is paramount, because people's lives are at stake, everything that we build, that we design, that we think of, we always take safety into account. There's an old maxim that civil engineers wear belts and suspenders because we always just want to be sure.
Got it. Associate Professor of Civil Engineering is the guest, Professor Ari Perez from Quinnipiac University. Professor, now what they're going to have to do, and I heard experts say yesterday, in fact, the DOT commissioner, Commissioner Yucalito, pointed out that there cannot be, because he was asked by the media in Hartford, there cannot be a so-called temporary structure here. So they're looking now at, after the road is cleaned up and I guess the pillars are checked and everything, they have to build a new bridge here from scratch, correct?
Yeah. You know, one of the things is, like I was saying, because you want structures to visually deform in order to give you an idea that something bad has happened, once you see that visual deformation, you do not take any risk and you just get brand new things in there. If you've ever like broken a paperclip by bending it back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, what you've seen is that every time you apply a little bit of stress, there is a small change that happens. And sometimes you can even tell in the discoloration. And just because you stop halfway through before it breaks, it doesn't mean that that paperclip is as strong as when you started. You've already done some of the damage. And so if you think about a fire affecting the steel, just because the steel didn't collapse, it doesn't mean that it's completely bounced back to normal. There are things that changed in that steel going to like the molecular structure at, you know, the very tiny molecule level that you just don't want to take any chances of. And the only way to really repair this is to like remelt it and make a new one. And so, it has to be a new bridge just because you want to be absolutely sure that what you are thinking you have in there is actually what you have. The same way that when I go out, you know, a night on the town, I make sure I have money in my bank account.
Yeah. And the steel, Professor, in a bridge like this, and I would imagine various structures, I would imagine there are numerous grades of steel and, as you say, mixtures and formulations here about what this bridge could have to take load-wise and what we saw yesterday, something that could happen catastrophically, but it cannot collapse.
Right. You know, I always say engineering is a game of give and take. It is almost like designing a football player. You can't just pack up a football player all full of muscle, 300 pounds of muscle, and then ask them to be a quarterback, because that's not what it is meant for. And so when we select our materials, we think of the wide range of context that this material could be used in, and then we select that specifically. A very easy to think of things is, we often use air entrainers in places where we think there's going to be a lot of frost action to allow for everything inside that concrete, like little pockets of air, to like break up the frost action and maybe even expand and contract a little bit without it breaking. And so when you select the steel for a project, you are looking at things like strength to weight ratio, you know, like amount of carbon in the iron to make the steel in case, you know, you want stainless steel type thing. And you're really thinking about, what will this element be subjected day in, day out? What happens is sometimes you get these freak accidents, you know, an old tanker, a petrol tanker catching fire is not something that you're really expecting day to day. And so those are more extreme events that hopefully the material can take, but it will be permanently damaged.
Professor, thank you. Associate Professor of Civil Engineering, Professor Ari Perez at Quinnipiac University. Professor, thank you. Great stuff. Great info. Thanks for the explanation. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Professor. Professor Ari Perez, Associate Professor of Civil Engineering at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Well, there you go. Joining us right now is Mayor Harry Rilling, the mayor of Norwalk. Mayor Rilling, Paul here. Good to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Not too bad, Mayor. So, Mayor, you get a call what time yesterday morning, and they tell you what?
Right about 5 after 6, my phone rang, and I saw that it was the deputy police chief, and usually no good news follows a call that early in the morning from the deputy police chief.
Yeah.
And he told me that there had been an accident on the highway, and there was a petroleum truck that was on fire underneath the bridge over the Fairfield Avenue overpass,
mm-hmm.
and that everybody was on the scene. The fire department was on the scene, police, state's notified, they're on their way, so... You know, it was early in the morning, and I knew that things were under control right away.
Under control, but now we have seen, Mayor, and thankfully that was put out relatively quickly. Only about half of the gasoline on that tanker actually burned. But I heard comments, and we used them earlier today. You're standing in with Governor Lamont today and some other officials. So I guess there's good news and extended news here. The good news is we should have, some traffic on 95 by Monday, right? But the extended news for the bridge is not good.
Yeah, you know, the bridge was actually replaced. That bridge was built in 2015, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's only 8 or 9 years old. And so, you know, at that time, it took quite some time to replace it. But, you know, we get used to it. We do detour around it. People get used to it. So the big thing is that the highway will be open. In the best guesstimate is early morning Monday for the rush hour, and that's the good news. Really remarkable response from my police department, my fire department, and certainly Governor Lamont's team in the state.
Yeah, and Mayor, obviously, you know, the traffic is what it is. I mean, there's only so much, right, you or any other mayor or a municipal official can do, no matter how many troopers, how many local or municipal cops there. If you cut off such an outlet as I-95 north and south, the traffic's got to go somewhere, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, for the most part, people are being very understanding, which is good to see. You know, not only do I have police officers deployed to do traffic all throughout the major intersections, but they still have to respond to calls for service as if it was a normal day.
Yeah, yeah. What do you, and Mayor, thankfully this will only be 3 or 4 days, but I would imagine for a small business that doesn't have the usual amount of traffic that's mobile in front of them, it's going to be a little bit of a hit. Have you heard anything at all, Mayor, regarding some of the businesses there, maybe just having to, you know, bite the bullet, if you will, a little here, and hopefully things get back to normal for them on Monday or Tuesday?
Yeah, you know, I really haven't heard too much. You know, my economic development team is keeping on top of this. And they, you know, obviously there's going to be a bit of a hit. But we also were very fortunate that we've developed our town into a very navigable town with walking and biking. So hopefully people will find alternate means of transportation and be able to get into the downtown area and still go with some of our businesses. I tell them, look, if you're stuck in traffic, pull over and go to a restaurant in town, you know, until the traffic starts to clear up. But also, Senator Blumenthal mentioned today that if there are any federal dollars that can be utilized to help for small business loans, very low interest loans or whatever, to help some of our businesses, that, you know, we're certainly going to explore that.
And finally, Mayor, I guess, with the road scheduled to reopen, as you said, and the governor said, and DOT said today, Monday around morning drive or around there, give or take on Monday, I guess now long term, as the plans have to kick in to replace that bridge, you're obviously going to have some long term, at least for several months, detours around town, right?
Yes, it'll be just that one area there. There are other streets leading out to Route 1, Connecticut Avenue. Some not as busy as that is, but, you know, it's simply you drive up that same road, make a right-hand turn, left-hand turn, and you're right back where you need to be.
All right. Mayor Harry Rilling, Norwalk, as hopefully things get better after the big accident, tanker truck fire and all that yesterday morning. Mayor, good to have you back on. You have the number, so anytime there's anything going on, give me a buzz.
I appreciate that. Thank you, and I will.
All right. Thanks, day. Mayor. Yep, take us up on it. Mayor Harry Rilling there, Mayor of Norwalk, as Mayor says, all is settling into place. So hopefully, there you have it, folks. Morning drive on Monday. His weekly wrap-up here, Chris Caruso is with us, former Democratic state rep, Bridgeport, mayoral candidate, and all of that. Mr. Caruso, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Very well, Frank. Very well, Frank. Very well, Paul.
It's all right,
Friday,
Chris.
So it's a good day.
It's all right. You know what, Chris? You can call me anything you want. As long as the people say, can I call you this? I say, well, is the check still going to clear? That's all I care about, Chris.
Exactly.
That's right. That's all I care about. It's all right.
It's Friday. So yeah,
Chris, I guess last night was the last of the scheduled budget hearings in Bridgeport. And I guess these things don't really normally draw a whole lot of people. What have you seen of the document this year or the numbers that have been tossed around? Anything surprise you in this or not?
No, Paul. The truth is back in 2015 at the time, Mayor Ganim increased the taxes, and the taxes haven't gone down beneath that level from the increase. So I know everyone's saying, well, there's no tax increase, things are going to be kept steady, but it's just not the fact. And the other truth to the overall budget, there is no direction in the budget. There's no vision, there's no plan of where the city wants to go. So again, it's a status quo budget without direction. And keep in mind that the grand list is shrinking in Bridgeport. We're not seeing the growth. So next year, the taxpayers are going to get hit pretty hard because there's less and less commercial growth. And I raised that at both the education public hearing and last night's hearing, that there needs to be a vision. And the city council are policymakers. They're not just budget makers. They're policymakers, and they need to insist upon a vision or a direction for the city. You know, I served on the city council back in the mid to late 80s. When the city basically went bankrupt, we had to borrow $30 million from the state of Connecticut. The city was in dire straits. Mm-hmm. There was talk of laying off police and so forth, closing firehouses, you name it. And I think we're headed in that direction again. And not enough people are talking about it. Last night, it was interesting. One of the speakers did talk about economic development, talked about a vision. But again, there's no direction going on. And then you've got the state of Connecticut. Just recently, I think in the state Senate, they approved a law now that permits abandoned or vacant office buildings to become apartments and basically bypass in many ways the zoning board. So, you know, where is the plan for that? You know, we're going to create so much housing in the state and in particular in the cities that it's going to have a detrimental effect overall unless we plan it along with commercial development and other things of that nature. Bridgeport, unfortunately, we've been enticing developers into the city with tremendous subsidies, you know, that are taking place. We've seen more and more nonprofits buying property, and that they come off the tax rolls. I'm not opposed to nonprofits. I think they play a part in our community, a very important part. But I think they have to be placed where they're going to have the less impact as far as taxes and also the commercial base for our city. So there's a lot of things, Paul. I don't know if the council is going to look at a vision or a plan. My only concern, they're going to look at it when it's too late. And I think we're on a train wreck that is yet to happen. So I'm very concerned. And, you know, then recently they're talking about a new police station, which I think is fine. There's a need for it. But they want to put it to the northern entrance of our downtown. You know, what statement does that make? You're driving in the downtown. The Ocean Sea Grill is property that can generate taxes, and they're going to put a building there that's going to be off the tax rolls. Not only that, to the entrance of your downtown, you're going to have a police building. You know, what statement does that make to people coming in? You know, the city's talked about arts and entertainment as a way of revitalizing the city, and that's laudable. It's done in other communities across the country. But you don't put a police station right across the street from your two theaters. But see, again, there's no planning, there's no vision. So it's kind of helter-skelter. It's, you know, happenstance as you're driving through. Oh, let's put something here, let's put something there. And what you do is you start taking more and more land that can generate taxes and give relief to the taxpayers in the city. And unfortunately, that's what I raised at the meeting.
Yeah, and Chris, so when you say, you know, this is kind of a runaway train here and something has to be done, give me a time frame here. Are we talking 3, 5, 10, 15 years? I mean, when do you think that things could get a little dicey here as far as cash flow?
I think next year, Paul, you know, when the reevaluations take place of the city, and, you know, the city will probably ask the city, state legislature to, forego the appraisals, you know, do a reevaluations, you know, do a 2-year extension or what have you. But all that's doing is moving the issue down the road. But I think next year, frankly, unless the grand list grows, unless we start bringing commercial development into this city, you're going to see the taxpayers are going to get hit and hit hard. They're already paying some of the highest taxes in the state. Mm. They're going to be paying more. So I think it's about a year off, unless the city, a vision or a strategic plan, you know, could take 5 years, you know, because you build it out over a 5-year period, or it could be 10 years. But if you don't start that process and get serious about it, we're in trouble, Paul. The other night I was at a planning and zoning commission, and get a load of this. You have a new master plan, a new plan of development for the city that requires no parking. So, you know, you build an office building, you build housing, there is no parking requirement. And then about a block away from our shoreline, our harbor, they're building a car wash. And it's ludicrous. This is your shoreline. Look at New Haven. Look at New London.
Yeah.
What they do with their harbors. Bridgeport should be doing the same. And, you know, the reason I say this stuff is because I'm a Bridgeport resident. I've served in elected office. I've seen the best and the challenging years of the city. And I think we're heading in that direction again. I think, frankly, if things aren't turned around and we really put a focus on a strategic plan, on a vision, we're going to be looking at the state as a takeover again. You know, it wasn't too long ago that the state came in and took over the finances of the city. As you may recall, at that time, Mary Moran, who was the mayor, declared bankruptcy.
I remember.
And the answer by the state was, well, we'll come in and we'll set up a financial review board and so forth. And that's what helped the city out. But things have changed so drastically from the 80s to now as far as our commercial development. Our education system is having major issues. They're looking for more money. And you know, the mayor is giving them $3 million, but they need more to build education. Mm-hmm. Education is a key component to a vision for the city, because when young people come in with children and they want to locate to a community, one of the first things they look at is the school systems.
Right.
And that's not being addressed. And commercial companies, corporations come in, and they're looking to see, you know, what's the education system for their employees?
Yeah.
You know, what's the nightlife? What's going on where there's entertainment and other arts and entertainment? Those are things that cities are judged on, but we're not addressing those. You know, we're opening restaurants and we're cutting ribbons, and within less than a year, these restaurants are closing. So there's Bridgeport is 17 square miles, Paul. It's not a lot of land, and we're starting to use our parklands for development. So all we're doing is we're taking properties and taking them off the tax rolls and putting in non-producing taxes. Now, you know, again, either we turn that and we say to nonprofits, yeah, there's certain places of the city where we could accommodate that. But on your commercial, your retail stretches, you've got to be building economic development as an engine to bring in more money, to reduce the tax burden on people, and to make the city, the quality of life, more livable.
Yeah,
but we're not doing it.
Yeah, and then the tax burden gets so onerous on these homes, there's no buyers for them. If people want to get out of them or to use any money they can make on their home, maybe as a retirement nest egg. Chris, finally, state capitol, we have, 5 days, I think, Tuesday, Wednesday, to go. A lot of the bills, you know, are not going to get acted on. There's just not enough time. But what do you see going on up there that's piqued your interest, if anything, over the past week?
Well, you know, I think what's happened, Paul, is a lot of the bills are being watered down. And, you know, I see the climate change bill is one of them. You know, they're watering it down in order to get it passed. I'm sure leadership has said, listen, if you want bills to pass, you've got to get agreement, or it can't be so onerous that it's going to stop the process or create long debates.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, because when you start doing that stuff, the legislation comes out, it's meaningless. the lobbyists have so much influence on that stuff that it's not even worth putting the legislation out. And I've seen that with a couple of bills that are kind of working their way through the pipeline. They become more incentives rather than actual doing. You know, when I was up there on environmental bills, I wouldn't settle for anything less than meaningful legislation that actually would change things, that make the quality of life better for people. But I've seen a lot of that stuff. They call it a work in progress. They say it's an incentive, you know, it's not a hammer type of thing. And that means nothing, because then the bill sits there, the law becomes law, but no one follows it.
And it's like, Chris, they only pass something to curry favor with, you know, they don't want to upset voters where 200 or 300 votes of, say, somebody with environmental intentions may cost them their house seat. Chris, one other thing I wanted to get your opinion on in about the minute we have left. You know, we talk about, you know, getting better electric service and helping people, yet we see the CEO of Eversource saying, that's it. We're not putting any more money in here. You know, we like working with other states. He talked about Massachusetts and New Hampshire, but he talked about, you know, I guess Pure and these people here. I mean, Chris, it's like a merry-go-round that doesn't stop. There's something about the regulatory environment in this state that a lot of people don't like.
Well, you know, Paul, though, this is a, you know, corporate hijacking, if you will, by Eversource to make those statements. I think it's irresponsible. And the truth of it is, what they're upset about is you have a chairman of PURA who's very independent-minded and has a great deal of experience working with regulatory agencies such as Eversource and some of the others. And she's working toward a performance-based system, which a lot of these companies don't want. They just want to be able to spend money. They want to be able to come before PURA and ask for rate increases and keep it going, and then later complain that the rates are too high. Mm. Well, they're the ones coming in for outrageous rate increases, and she holds their feet to the fire. So the typical response is, well, we're going to, you know, we're not going to invest in infrastructure for the next 5 years. Good luck with that, because if they don't do it, they'll be brought into court and they'll be forced to do it. They're being regulated. They're a regulated industry in Connecticut. You know, and other states use performance-based systems. They just don't want it. Mm. They've lived high on the hog paw for many, many years.
Yeah.
They've had outrageous increases for residential. They haven't promoted, you know, energy alternatives where, you know, you could actually, you know, get rates at cheaper costs from other companies. They haven't done that stuff. And they've had a field day. And now they're being held accountable, and they don't like it. And I have to tell you, Paul, cheers to the governor for saying that he's reappointing her.
Yeah.
You know, I think you've got to fight fire sometime with fire. And, you know, and that's just the way it has to be. Mm-hmm. And these companies, they're doing pretty well. Look at what these executives are doing.
Oh, I know. No, yeah, I know. Okay. Chris, got a roll. Appreciate the time as always. Chris Caruso. Yes, Chris, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You too, Paul.
Thank you, sir. Chris Caruso there. Okay.